It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Ladies and gentle people, every time there's an election, this is what you scream for, a ballot show. I get together with my partner, Michael Germanuel Jr., here in the studio now. We go through the whole ballot as best we can and, you know, try to answer any questions you may have. Typically, we don't take phone calls during this segment because we don't have enough time. I have a feeling we might be able to take one or two today, if you're so inclined. But, Mike, how are you, sir?
Ray, I'm doing well. I'm doing really well. Glad to be here, and glad the ballot is not that complicated this time.
But the factor of unknown in terms of these some of these people running, this is like no names, unknown. So many people are confused. I mean, who are these people? I don't even know who they are.
No. I get a lot of texts and a lot of messages from people about who to vote for in different statewide races. And for the first time in my life, I tell them, I have no idea.
Yeah, me too.
I have never said that before.
I've never left things blank, and I left things blank. Yeah. And I'm telling my listeners that when they email or message me, and they're like, no, you of all people. Yes, me of all people.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's not easy.
I'm kind of glad we don't have a lot of statewide ballot initiatives this time. Usually we have a few in June, you know? And we could make fun of them, you know, because a lot of them are dumb and the titles of them don't match what's actually in them.
Ain't that the truth?
Which will lead us to a discussion about the attorney general race, I hope, at some point during the show.
Amen. I think that's a biggie. I was going to ask you, this cycle, what are the most important races to you, meaning in terms of impact on the state, but those races that will get maybe some more attention than others?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the attorney general race, it is the only statewide race, I think, that really matters.
Well, let's start there.
Yeah. Anna Marie Schubert, Sacramento County DA.
I love her.
Love her. You've probably had her on the show.
I've had her on, and she's one of the sharpest people I've ever met.
Here's how I know she's sharp. She's running as no party preference. So let's just start there. We've had a lot of smart people try to put a round peg into a square hole in California by running as a Republican. And in a statewide contest, long ago, we've concluded, if you're running as a Republican in California, you're right. You just fail the test right there. It's not doable. There's not enough money. There's not enough money to rebuild the brand. And donors are not stupid. They're not going to invest in a losing campaign. And 100% of these have been losing campaigns for a long time. So she has, I think, very correctly gone to decline to state or no party preference. Now, you know, she's got to get into the top two. And so that means Rob Bonta, who's this ludicrous incumbent, appointed incumbent, he's actively rooting for the Republican to finish second so that he can face a Republican in November and not have a race. So if you're center right, and I don't care who the California Republican Party's endorsed, because they do have an endorsed. I think they may have endorsed her, actually.
No, they didn't.
They did not endorse
her.
No,
I don't believe so.
Yeah, this is how much I'm following the state party these days. I'm really not sure. But anyway, if the California Republican Party did not endorse her, then just ignore their recommendation.
I had Harmeet Dillon on last week. You know who she is?
Oh, yeah, sure. She's the RNC committee woman.
And she was talking about how Newsom and Bonta are trying to pick their opponents in their advertising. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Newsom going after the Republican that was nominated or approved by the party, and that's, what's his name, the farmer from up in north, Dolly.
Yep, Dolly.
And I think they're doing that because there might be some fear of Schellenberger. We'll get to that. Maybe. And then Bonta doing the same thing. And that's an old stunt that's been done before, but people need to see through that stuff.
It all really depends on whether Republicans are going to look at this ballot and understand what's going on and understand they don't have to reflexively support the R. Schellenberger is a good example. He's running as no party preference. So that's why Newsom doesn't want him in the race, because we've seen in the past the no party preference candidate can get 46% to 48%. And if it's a wave year like it's looking to be, where the Biden collapse is, you know, collapsing the numbers of Democrats all over North America, then you have a situation where an NPP candidate might benefit from a very special year where people, even in California, have seemed to have lost a lot of confidence in the Democrats to do the right thing. So, you know, that's the big dynamic.
Yeah. I agree with you that the AG is one of the most important offices in the state. Rob Bonta is the appointed incumbent. Eric Early is a Republican. He's an attorney business owner. Nathan Hochman or Hochman, I can't remember. I believe I had him on the air. That, I believe, is the one that the party has gone with. He's a consul general. Dan Kapelovich, Green Party. And then Anne-Marie Schubert, the district attorney of Sacramento.
Yep.
No party preference.
That's your
and
candidate.
And she is brilliant.
Yep.
I mean, if you're struggling as a conservative or as anybody who cares about law over the right candidate, the right person for that job, I would give her the nod in a heartbeat.
Yeah. It's so interesting to look at, you know, Bonta could probably do himself a favor by actually being a centrist on issues of criminality and bail and sentencing and Prop 47 and 57.
But he's not.
But he's not going to do that because the hard left of his party, which is an increasing share of that party, fundamentally believes that prison is not a deterrent to crime. And that is, I still can't wrap my head around that. If you are in prison, you are committing almost literally no crime against anybody outside prison. You might give a hit, you know, some guy called up last week and said, well, what about these guys that make phone calls to gang members and tell them, you know, who to go hit or who to go harass? Okay, but that's not what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about this criminal element that has been unleashed on Californians through Prop 47 and 57 and the pandemic, the prison releases in the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
An AG like Schubert would end all of that as a matter of policy and lead the charge back from this huge mistake. Ray, you and I have been around since the three strikes days. You were on the ground at three strikes.
Yeah.
And use a gun and you're done, and all these initiatives that we use to clean it up, and they've reversed course and are not admitting that they failed in doing so. So statewide, if you check anything statewide, it's got to be for this. Plus, the attorney general gets to assign the title and summary to statewide ballot initiatives.
I was just going to bring that up. Where we have a huge problem every cycle.
Huge problem, and actually a running joke across the country about how we do this. Once a great tool of grassroots change where the citizens could have a check against the legislature by taking matters into their own hands, developing ballot language, going out, paying for signatures, qualifying it, and making sweeping changes to the law. Since 1971, the attorney general has been able to do a title and summary, but it did not get politicized until Kamala Harris was the attorney general.
You got that straight.
And now it is a complete political nightmare to get anything passed to undo what the legislatures have been doing to us.
A quick look-see at the governor's race. Is the incumbent vulnerable at all?
Only if a decline to state or a no-party preference candidate manages to finish second. But even then, it's a long shot. I mean, let's face it, the recall took a lot of steam out of the engine that of, you know, getting, you know, Newsom out. And as
he had big numbers there, but since then, his polling numbers in certain issues have dropped.
Yeah, but I mean, when push comes to shove,
right,
you know, it's the voters throughout the pandemic, all the fraud and the government, all the problems, you know, that really lay at the governor's feet. And until I, you know, there is a pain threshold, and I discussed this with Christina last week. And for Gray Davis, the pain threshold was those few days where our lights would not come on. It was the rolling blackouts, and that gave Schwarzenegger a window into you know, this recall campaign. And for Newsom, I think it's going to be, if it happens, when you go to turn on your water tap and nothing comes out. And then we could point back to the trillions and trillions and trillions of gallons of water that he's been pouring through that delta unnecessarily for years now, and understanding the effects of public policy on our basic needs. And that might be, if it happens, that might be a pain threshold that will cause Californians to reconsider what they're doing.
As we've mentioned, the party has endorsed Brian Dahle, who's a senator and a farmer. And I would have no problem with a farmer being governor.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Right.
Bring it on. Schellenberger, no party preference, maybe is the only other name in this race that would be even remotely identifiable.
That's it.
And a lot of people, independents, Republicans, and Democrats, have jumped all over him, and they seem to love him. But is there enough? Is there enough name recognition there to come in second? If he comes in second, I would submit that that would be a very interesting race from that point on between Newsom and him, if he comes in second.
It could be really interesting, and what makes a party endorsement, so the state parties endorses Farmer, what makes the party endorsement really have a little bit of impact is if that party has the money to get the name of that person out to its voters. And the California Republican Party doesn't have the money even to do that. They have the money to get together at a convention and make an endorsement, but there's going to be a lot of people that don't understand who the California Republican Party has endorsed. And so we'll see what happens. I think more GOP voters are getting wise to the fact that it's time to stop beating our head against the wall and go with the NPP candidates. That is going to be the future.
That's the future
of saving this state.
Let's take a break. When we come back, very briefly, we'll go through Lieutenant Governor and some of those that you don't know, but we'll try and throw a couple of names out there that might make sense. News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ. Michael Germanuel Jr., yours truly, Ray Appleton. We're going through the ballot. Pay attention. Take notes. We'll be right back.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
Are we having fun yet? If you're just joining us, we're doing a ballot show. Me and Michael Germanuel Jr. And we're going to try and get through most, if not all, of the important stuff. Getting to important stuff, and then I come to Lieutenant Governor. Big deal. Why? Why do we even have a Lieutenant Governor? I don't get it. I mean, it's just one of those know-nothing jobs. And then looking at the names here, I know who the incumbent is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say nice things about her.
Yeah, yeah.
Very nice things.
I think
and the rest are like,
I think the Lincoln Club actually endorsed her when she first ran because she was, you know,
kind of pro-ag.
Yeah, kind of pro-ag, kind of pro-water, but really can do nothing about either of those things from her perch in that job. So, you know.
So, I mean, I would assume we'd just keep going with her because she's kind of there, been there, done that. And she does have leanings, you know, towards a little bit of, you know, the water stuff and the ag stuff. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know what else to say. Secretary of State, who cares? Or is there something important there that we need to know?
Rachel Hamm is evidently from Fresno. This is what I hear, or the Fresno area. The last Secretary of State we had that was of any consequence,
Bill
Jones.
Yeah,
he's probably the last person to clean up the voter rolls and really care about doing that job end to end. And that's been a long time ago. So I think we're stuck with Shirley Weber, no doubt.
Controller.
Who even is the controller? I don't even know who it is.
I don't think I don't think the incumbent is running.
Yep. It doesn't look like it. Yeah.
And then again, these are all, I'm sorry for the silence, folks, but we just don't know who these people are.
I mean, they're, you know, a lot of people, if they've never heard of any of the candidates, they will go look at their ballot designation and they might say, oh, a chief financial officer, I'll pick them, you know, or financial analyst, I'll pick them. But that's all they'll know about any of them.
Yeah. Of what?
You know,
Bubblegum Factory.
What's sort of interesting is I think that when people put that they're an elected official this year, that might not help them that much. So this Steve Glazer, California State Senator, if this is kind of an anti-politician year, that might not be good, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Treasurer Fiona Ma has been around forever.
Yep.
She's the incumbent, and she'll probably remain the incumbent.
Agree.
Attorney General, we've already talked about. We're both very high on Anne-Marie Schubert.
Yep.
No party preference there, and that gives her a leg up on the horse.
Yep.
Insurance commissioner. I'm not even sure what the insurance commissioner does.
Well, I can tell you this because I have a lot
of... And that's your biz.
I have a lot of relations with that office. And because it's a political position, most of the time you get somebody that can't even spell insurance that holds that office. And Richard Lara is no exception. You know, way back, there was a proposition that created the Office of Insurance Commissioner as an elected job. It's so far back, I can't remember the number. But... So it's become a political office. You get political people in that office. They don't understand the industry. And, you know, California is in a very big crisis with the insurance market. I mean, if you have a cabin anywhere up near brush or wildfire, if you're up in the Napa area, anywhere where there's wind and brush and getting insurance, almost impossible. And yet there is really nothing being done about it in the state of California in terms of responding to this with some kind of public policy. That's because nobody in the insurance commissioner's office even knows what to do. So people,
that's so enlightening.
People that, let's say you had a $2 million cabin in up at Shaver, you may have been paying 5 years ago, you may have been paying about $3,000 to $4,000 for insurance. You might be paying $20 this year.
I believe okay? it. I believe it.
So important position, but really... Until we get it out of the hands of politics and back to somebody that actually knows what they're doing, it's going to continue to be something that underserves the voters.
Is there any name there that you're familiar with? That
I know Greg Conlon's a pretty smart person. He's running as a Republican, so he can't be that smart. But I would say that of all the people on that list, he's probably the only one that's qualified to be the insurance commissioner. And he probably won't win.
That's good to know anyway, that at least there's somebody semi-qualified.
Yep.
Would he have done better if he ran as a no-party preference?
He would have.
I'm sure that would be the end, yeah. Superintendent of Public Instruction, people place so much in this one. I get asked this one a lot, and I answer the people that ask me, I'm like, why? You know, look at the product that's being turned out in public schools in California. It's garbage, as far as I'm concerned.
In many areas it is, and in this case, Tony Thurman will probably win, but I couldn't even if he had to sit here and tell you what he's accomplished during his term, he probably be a short show. You'd probably do it in maybe the one segment, 15 minutes.
The Board of Equalization, why even bother to go through that? I mean, these are people that play with your taxes and all that. I mean, is it important?
I mean, it's you know. The way these lines are drawn in the state, you might have one or two Republican seats of the, I think there's five, but essentially they serve as overseers of the tax collection bureaucracy in California, and they adjudicate disputes and things like that. Ted Gaines, I know pretty well. I think he'll get reelected. He's very good.
He's been there for a while, hasn't he?
He has. Yeah. But the others on this list, I really don't know anything about them. So,
and that's most of the ballot.
Yep.
The senator race is one that, again, people are punching me out on it and go, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And I look at you, almighty wise one, and say, what do we do?
You know, I think 25, 30 years ago, Earl Smitkamp, the late Earl Smitkamp, would... And this is when Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein first were elected. And he'd say to me, oh, so I'd be sitting in his office talking to him. And he'd say, oh, I got a call coming in. It's my senator. And I'd say, oh, wow. And he goes, yeah, it's a senator from Georgia. Because he didn't feel like he had a senator in California. And, you know, people that like him that were in industry and farming and business, we really haven't had a senator that represents our interests in 30 years. And nothing will change as a result of this year's election. So Alex Padilla was appointed as a replacement and to Kamala Harris, and I have no doubt that he'll be reelected.
You know, and it gets confusing because we've got U.S. Senator full term and the U.S. United States Senator partial and expired term.
Yep.
Same deal.
Same deal.
Padilla and Padilla.
Yep.
That's exactly what will happen. And if you were going to vote for somebody other than that, is there a name you would throw out?
Oh, I think I'd vote for Mark Muser. Yep. I recognize the name. I don't remember a whole lot about him, but I would just go on the person whose name I recognize, and that's his.
He's a constitutional attorney, so.
It's kind of sad in California. It's a big state, a lot of smart people, and we wind up getting no competition on these ballots, and it's really made our state worse.
Some of the congressional races for the House.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
So far, so good. Michael Dermanuel Jr. is here, and we're doing the ballot, getting through those things that are most relative to this audience. We're going to play with some congressional races now, and then we'll come back to some of the statewide races. One particular name coming back in a state senator category is George Radonovich. Definitely want to talk about that. But kicking off Representative District 5, a couple of familiar names, Nathan Magzik, Tom McClintock. And one would probably wonder why anybody would go after Tom McClintock. But I may be wrong about that. Your opinion, Michael?
Well, the Lincoln Club endorsed Nathan over Tom McClintock, and there's a couple of reasons. And I think they're very valid. You know, I've known Tom McClintock for a long, long time, 30 years. You know, I was involved with the Republican Party for 30 years before I jumped ship and became no party preference myself. And he was the firebrand conservative, rallied the troops, planted the flag, fired everybody up back when being a Republican was still kind of a thing in California. And he'd rail against the career politicians, you know. And then it's 30 years, and Tom's a career politician. So that's kind of one of the main reasons why we went with Nathan, because Tom's been there long enough. And the second thing is, and this is the harsh reality, it's hard to get things done in Washington. But the reality is, you know, let's just take when I ran for Congress in 1994. The three issues were crime, immigration, and water. And in 2022, the issues are crime, immigration, and water. So have we made progress? And I would have to say objectively not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to turn people out who've been there most of that time and let new people come in and see if they can make a difference. And so we're very impressed with Nathan, the job he's done at the county, and particularly during the fires. But I know he's working very hard in the district. He knows it's uphill. He knows and he really agonized over the decision whether or not to run, because we all do have respect for Tom McClintock and his ideology, but not necessarily his production as a legislator. So,
well, I don't think there's any doubt if Nathan got that gig, he would do a hell of a job.
Oh, there's no doubt.
He's proven that. So it may be time to walk down that road.
Yep. That one wasn't that hard for us, really. It's just sometimes you didn't
have to labor over that, huh?
No.
Okay. Next, let's see. We're bouncing around here. Let's go up to 13. This would be that particular race with, whoops, stop that. Spills water. Real good. Paper towel, sir. Thank you. In this particular race, we see some familiar names. Adam Gray, Phil Arbayo, who's run against Devin before, I believe.
Yeah.
John Duarte, who's a farmer businessman and a client of this station I know very, very well. I was so surprised to see him jumping into this. Also, that's it, you know. So what do we think of that one?
It's interesting to see the West Side jumping in behind Duarte because, you know, there's been this relationship for a lot of years with both sides, but I think we're seeing a level of desperation now that if anything is going to change whatsoever, you've got to get Democrats out of the Congress. If there's any hope for agriculture to be a sustainable industry in the Central Valley. And so you're seeing a lot of the ag money go to Duarte. And I think it's a two-person race. It's going to be Gray, the incumbent, and Duarte. Arbalo is looking for a job. I don't know why he's running again. He never had a chance and still doesn't. But, so we'll probably see it come down to a couple of people, and then we'll see if this election dynamic in November really stops at California's border, or if we actually do feel a wave year in this state. Because prior wave years, when Republicans have picked up seats throughout the country, that really didn't happen here, you know?
Yeah.
And if I'm Duarte and I get to a place where I'm running in November, I think you've got to be as aggressive and bold as possible in your messaging. And it's simply this: if you vote for Adam Gray, we're going to run out of water. And I don't know. I don't even know if you need a different message than that.
I think it's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Which one would you like to do next?
Well, you know, Kevin McCarthy,
let's see, 20
is 20. And, you know, this is a Republican plus 20% district. So there's really not a race here, but it's interesting that Kevin has, who I've known for a long time, has been primarily a Kern County representative. And with the new lines, his district has been drawn from there all the way up into a northeast part of Fresno County. So
weird.
You know, all of a sudden Kevin is our representative, and he's the GOP leader, the minority leader in the House. I don't know, you know, certainly he is politically pretty savvy guy. I mean, he is works hard, barnstorms the country, raises money for candidates, gets behind people, not bashful about doing everything it takes to acquire power. My concerns about Kevin are what he does when he does acquire power, which is shifts to a focus of trying not to lose it rather than leveraging it to do some things that are good. So Republicans tend to play prevent defense the minute they acquire power. And for me, the measure of McCarthy is going to be, if he becomes speaker, what are you going to do with it? And if he
how solid is him becoming speaker? I mean, well, for a while it was just assumed, done deal. But now there's some other things that have popped up that may get in the way. I don't know that they're going to be that harmful.
The way this still works back there is if you've done the work, you've raised the money, you've gotten behind all those brand new people that are there. I expect there to be a campaign against McCarthy for speaker, but I don't expect McCarthy to lose if, in fact, he becomes the person that's in the majority. So it'll be nice to get Pelosi out. I'm sick of looking at her every day. She's got nothing intelligent to say ever, and I'm amazed that that they've had the power as long as they've had there in the House. So
let's pop over to District 21. Jim Costa, that's a name we know.
Yep.
Eric Garcia is a farmer therapist, or father therapist. He's a Democrat. Michael Marr is a Republican, American business owner, aviation business owner. I can't read today. And Matt Stoll, who's a small business owner. Republican. So you got two Democrats, two Republicans. Talk to me.
Yeah. Well, I would say this, you know, Costa survived a lot of challenges.
Yep.
Right. And he's survived some very good, well-funded efforts to replace him. And he seems to land on his feet. I objectively don't see any reason why that would not happen again, unless of course that wave, that red wave shows up here in November. Stoll and Marr, I know a little bit about. They're both perfectly acceptable as candidates and will try very hard if one of them happens to make the runoff. But at the end of the day, unless there's gigantic money and a gigantic ballot harvesting get-out-the-vote effort for whoever the GOP candidate is, there's no reason to believe Costa will lose, which is kind of a shame because, in all honesty, he's had many chances in a Democrat-held majority to really deliver water for the valley also.
And he hasn't.
And he has not.
No.
So
he could have been the fair-haired child of that whole party on the West Coast had he chosen to walk that route.
He and Feinstein, both. Feinstein having all the seniority she's got, all the money and support she's gotten from ag and farming over the years, and those two laid a golden goose zero for water.
It's time for a break, but I want to get one more in very quickly, and that's 22. A couple of familiar names in there. David Valadao, we know very well. And look at this name from the past, Chris Matisse. Ring a bell, anybody? Also a Republican. You've got three Republicans, one Democrat in this race. Rudy Salas, who's, you know, the California legislator right now. Well, what's going to happen here?
I think, well, certainly Valadao survives this June, you know, part of the election, obviously, even though his district is new. It's always been uphill for David every district he's ever won in has been, he's been at a huge disadvantage. And so I give him the edge because the guy has been able to survive. Now, TJ Cox beat him a few years ago, but TJ Cox didn't even know why he won. There was a big,
I don't even think he knew he won until, you know, a few weeks after, but
there was a very big ballot harvesting operation on his behalf, and it really did sneak up on Valadao and catch him by surprise. That's not going to happen again. So it'll be Salas and Valadao in November, and you know, I think Valadao is going to remain there.
I agree. Break time at KMJ. We're not done yet. Stay there.
Right now.
The Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast. KMJNow.com.
Have you learned anything yet as we saunter through the ballot, me, you, and Michael DeManuel Jr.? State Senate District number 4. Now, we probably wouldn't even play with half of these, but all of a sudden, in this particular race, comes a very familiar name. You've got, let's see, 1, 2 Democrats and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Republicans or something like that. And as you go down the list here, the very last name is one of George Radonovich.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, a somewhat popular congressman.
Yep.
He's a winemaker in Mariposa area. First person to do wine in Mariposa, I think, ever. And he wants back into it on a state level. You guys ran against each other once.
We
for
did.
That congressional district.
We
I
did.
Forgot about that.
In 94.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what do you think? Wow.
Well, we became good friends back then. How could you not be friends with George? He's one of the nicest
people. He's a great guy. Lovely man.
And so he had called me about his race, and then I called him back with the proverbial, what in the world are you doing? You know, why do you want to get back in? And yeah, he has a son about the same age as our son, and so he's in his early 20s, mid-20s, and kind of getting on with his adult life. And so George was thinking maybe he could get back in the legislature and help with some of these issues as pertains to water and crime and all the other things that we're facing. So good name ID up in that district. I think he's raised a lot of money. He's certainly been dialing for dollars, and we definitely threw our support behind him, and I think he's got a good chance. That district does lean Republican, so of all the people I see up and down this ballot, I see him getting to a runoff and probably doing pretty well in November.
And when you say that district, what, you know, geographically, what are we talking about?
Oh, it's definitely kind of a northern valley, northeast valley district, kind of up in his area where you've got some rural and some mountain counties and you know, picks up quite a bit of his old stomping grounds. And the other thing I kind of like about this is I love Patterson having a partner in crime up there. I really do. I think those two would work very
that
well together.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. And listen, Jim Patterson to me is one of the most effective legislators in the history of this area. And so those two able to reach across the aisle, make friends, make their case, get a couple of wins a year, I think it's good.
Two more state senate districts, if I can talk about with you just very quickly, people I know, and a District 14, Ana Caballero is running. Very pro-ag, high on water. I mean, from a Republican point of view, if there has to be a Democrat, her. Would you disagree?
No, I wouldn't disagree at all.
Yeah.
No, I think it's highly likely to happen.
Yeah, I mean, she's got this one nailed. I don't think there's any problem there. And then a name that has returned in the Senate District 16, somebody always got a kick out of because for once, I mean, there was a time when she dropped out of the Republican Party, and that's Nicole Parra, who is running against Melissa Hurtado, who is the incumbent. You got Democrat against Democrat there, and that race has gotten a little ugly with some of the radio advertising.
It has.
What do you make of it?
A little family squabble.
Yeah.
Well, Melissa Hurtado was kind of a newcomer. She beat Andy Vidak.
Yeah.
Very unexpected 4 years ago, now back for re-election. Nicole Parra has been on a ballot here and there around the valley. So the name identification is strong for both of those candidates. I actually have no idea what's going to happen here because I don't know if Hurtado has really created the political organization to sustain her against somebody like Parra. So
I don't think she has, but that's just my gut.
I'm saying it's a coin flip. I don't know who's going to win here. Regardless, Hurtado on some issues has been pleasantly, surprisingly good.
Well, and, I mean, she used to work for oil company.
Right.
When she was sitting in where you're sitting right now, she was very big on oil exploration. We can't give this stuff up, the fossil fuels. It's a joke to do anything else. And also ag and water. I thought I was talking to a Republican, you know?
Yep. So I think it's interesting. That's probably the biggest intra-party squabble I see on the ballot, where you got a couple of people that can move votes against each other.
You know, I think Nicole will take that one. That's just my gut.
Okay.
We can take a very quick phone call right now before news, and we're going to do that. Marty, you're on KMJ. Go for it.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. Yeah. You know, and no offense to women. You know, hey, the world couldn't go around without them. But this is kind of a Wilma and Betty thing from the Flintstones. You know, the left is like, charge it. I mean, it's getting kind of out of control. And, you know, basic, you know, economics are kind of going out the window, you know, spend.
You think
prices up, spend more.
And so your point is?
Well, my point is you know, where is the accountability? And when we are going to elect these next officials, let's hold them accountable.
You know, it's going to be difficult.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult because the main mechanism for holding politicians accountable is actually on their side when it comes to all that, and that's the media. So, and they will rabbit hole stories that don't agree with their own perspective, and so I wish it weren't so, but it is so.
Coming up, we'll talk about some local stuff and maybe sashay back to a couple of state things. Michael Germanuel Jr. is here. We're doing a ballot show, trying to get through as much of it as we can. And we will continue after a short break on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ, and the Ray Appleton radio program. Stay put.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.